Welcome to EncLive On Air. I'm your host today, Caroline Seymour. EncLive On Air is a podcast from EncLive, which provides oncology professionals with the resources and information they need to provide the best patient care. In both digital and print formats, EncLive covers every angle of oncology practice, from new technology to treatment advances to important regulatory decisions. In today's episode, we had the pleasure of speaking with Debu Tripathi, MD, Professor and Chairman in the Department of Breast Medical Oncology and Division of Cancer Medicine at the University of Texas MD Anderson Cancer Center, to discuss ongoing research in patients with leptomeningeal disease and HER2-positive breast cancer. Dr. Tripathi is a co-author on the Phase 2 TBCRC-049 trial, which is evaluating the combination of tucatinib, trastuzumab, and capecitabine for the treatment of leptomeningeal disease, or LMD, in patients with HER2-positive breast cancer. The results from the study showed that at a median follow-up of 18 months, the median overall survival was 10 months and the median time to central nervous system progression was 6.9 months for the 17 patients who received the triplet regimen. LMD is a rare complication associated with some advanced solid tumors, including breast cancer, that occurs when tumor cells spread to the leptomeninges, thin layers of tissue that cover the brain and spinal cord. Symptoms can include seizures, double vision, and weakness or lack of coordination in the limbs. Traditionally, the median overall survival for patients with LMD is less than 6 months. During our exclusive interview, Dr. Tripathi explained the rationale for the TBCRC-049 trial, the challenges of investigating a disease that appears in less than 5% of patients with breast cancer, and potential avenues for future investigations. What served as the rationale for the Phase 2 TBCRC-049 trial?
Leptomeningeal disease in patients with HER2-positive metastatic breast cancer is becoming increasingly common. And even though it is a rare form of the disease, we do see that in general, patients with metastatic HER2-positive breast cancer do have a higher incidence of CNS disease. In part, we believe this is because the systemic therapies are quite effective, yet they may not penetrate the blood-brain barrier ideally. The class of drugs known as tyrosine kinase inhibitors that are a key component of how we treat HER2-positive breast cancer may have better penetration of the blood-brain barrier because they're small molecules, better than antibodies, and they have shown activity in CNS metastases, lapatinib as well as neratinib, and then most recently tucatinib, which really has the highest level of evidence because in the randomized HER2CLIMB study, when compared to capecitabine and trastuzumab, the couplet, the addition of tucatinib did improve progression-free survival and overall survival, an improvement in systemic disease. And this trial actually enrolled patients not only with a history of brain metastases, but actual active brain metastases, as long as they were not very symptomatic. And in that study, survival and progression-free survival was improved, as well as CNS control. Responses in the CNS were seen and delays in progression in the CNS were seen. So for that reason, it was felt that the very difficult clinical situation of leptomeningeal disease might be addressed by the HER2CLIMB regimen of that triplet of drugs.
And then diving right into the bulk of the data, what stood out to you both in terms of efficacy and safety with this regimen in this population?
Well, the overall efficacy of this regimen, the HER2CLIMB triplet, shows a hazard rate of nearly half in terms of progression-free survival and about a third in terms of overall survival. So clearly an effective component of overall treatment. And as I mentioned, we saw similar gains specifically in the subgroup of patients with CNS disease and actual responses in the CNS. That really was probably the most important motivating factor in using this regimen in this difficult to treat disease. And I should also mention that there have been very few trials with leptomeningeal disease in general. It's a disease where patients have a very poor performance status. And so one either is going to have difficulty doing a trial or, as was done in this trial, has to modify the eligibility criteria. We allow patients with a KPS of 50 or higher, which is generally a group that may not enroll on other studies.
And in terms of safety?
So the safety profile, we know very well of this triplet from the large HER2CLIMB study. And the main toxicities are those that we expect with HER1 and HER2 kinase inhibitor therapy and capecitabine given together. Because tucatinib is more HER2 selective, we fortunately do not see as much nausea, vomiting, and diarrhea as we do with lesser selective HER2 and HER1 kinase inhibitors. But of course, capecitabine does also cause gastrointestinal side effects. So that was really the primary side effect that we saw in a majority of patients. Fortunately, most of them were grade 1 or 2, but there were a few patients that had grade 3 nausea, vomiting, and diarrhea. Hand-foot syndrome is also seen primarily due to capecitabine. There may be a small component of that due to catinib. That was rarely more than grade 2, but generally was manageable. Fatigue was also seen. And then we did see transaminitis, one episode of grade 3, but most were grade 1 and 2 on that regimen.
And what would you say the significance of these data are?
The importance of this data are that we actually can see some benefit of treatment of leptomeningeal disease. In some cases, people have taken a very nihilist approach to this disease, that it's really not treatable, or that it requires intrathecal treatment, or maybe whole brain, some cranial axis radiation, which is very toxic. But to approach this with systemic therapy is really novel. And I think those are important findings. It's a difficult disease to study for the reasons I mentioned. And also, it's not very common, and enrolling enough patients to really have good statistics and confidence intervals is difficult. We did achieve this to a certain extent on the study, not to our intended amount of 30 patients, though. We enrolled 17 patients because with approval of the drug and the recognition that it already did have effectiveness in the CNS, naturally, clinicians use this for the treatment of leptomeningeal disease, and we're able to get it approved and used in the clinic. So at that point, our accrual fell off. Thankfully, it meant that the patients were actually getting access to this treatment. So we did report the data with less than the intended amount of statistical power in terms of describing the overall survival. But it was in the range of 10 months, which we felt was really a good benchmark to reach. Greater than we've seen in small historical series. And I think it's something to build on. I think with finely tuning the regimen, that we can potentially really improve patients' quality of life, which is probably one of the most important metrics in addition to overall survival.
And are there any other future research directions in this space, either planned or ongoing, that are important to highlight?
Yes, there is some work going on with leptomeningeal disease in general. There are some intrathecal regimens that are being tried. At our institution, we commonly use trastuzumab intrathecally. We have demonstrated the safety. Of course, it has to be given without the preservatives in them. There are some newer tyrosine kinase inhibitors in testing. And then there has been some data with antibody drug conjugates. There's been a lot of excitement about trastuzumab deruxtecan, for example, and some preliminary data, although not a dedicated trial, has shown some activity with this and other antibody drug conjugates. So there will be more opportunities and improvements. The most important thing is we have to do the trials. It is a difficult disease to study, and I believe that with this study leading the way, that we will start to get more clinical experience and clinical trial data that will help guide clinicians on treating this difficult disease.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to this episode of OncLive On Air. Check back on Thursdays for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field. For more updates in oncology, be sure to visit www.onclive.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. OncLive is also on social media. On Twitter, follow us at OncLive and OncLive SOSS. On Facebook, like us at OncLive and OncLive State of the Science Summit, and follow our OncLive page on LinkedIn. If you liked today's episode of OncLive On Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, and many of your other favorite podcast platforms so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you are there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to OncLive On Air.